I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our new podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. We're both journalists who moonlight as poker players, and that's the lens we're going to use to approach this entire show.
We're going to be discussing everything from high-stakes poker to personal questions.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
And of course, we'll be talking about the election, too.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Let's have some fun. On a, man, is it Thursday already? Or is it Wednesday? Wednesday. No, we're fine. It's Wednesday. It's hump day. And here's what's on tap for tonight. One, we're going to talk a little bit more about that FBI shoot with a former SWAT team guy. One of the FBI hero whistleblowers, Steve Friend, is going to join us next hour. We'll talk to him about the nitty gritty stuff like that. That'll be fun. Going to talk a bit more about what the COVID fallout is still doing to us, the mental health, the dollars, the everything. Catholics being rejected from adoption. More open anti-white racism, courtesy of New York, and a Russian spy who had his email address as 007. All that and so much more coming up tonight on the world-famous Jesse Kelly Show. I do want to do something briefly, because actually I'm going to kind of open with an email, but I wanted to play this for you first. Today is the one-year anniversary of the Inflation Reduction Act. Just, I think, a helpful little reminder to how broken and despicable and corrupt our country is. They will put together a massive bill that's just a handout to all their climate change friends, does nothing, doesn't even pretend to do anything about the dollar, the value of the dollar, anything. And these people are so despicable, so craven. They will call it the Inflation Reduction Act without a moment of hesitation. And so today, I'm not going to play a bunch of sound for you. All the Democrats, Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, they were all out there celebrating something that has done nothing. Keep in mind, the only thing this thing did was it stole money from your pocket and it handed it to their friends. That's all it is. That's all these people do now. It's all just professional money laundering. They steal your money out of your paycheck. And then they hand gigantic checks over to people who donate to their campaigns and their friends. That's all this stuff is. Just a big handout. But I did think what John Podesta said today, I thought it was pretty interesting and pretty revealing. Because again, I want to remind everyone, Maui is going through devastation right now. Not one person either. People dying. They're having to try to identify the charred remains of Americans, your fellow Americans, my fellow Americans. People have had everything taken from them. And John Podesta got up today and said this.
As Corrine noted, we're marking the one-year anniversary of a truly transformative piece of legislation, the Inflation Reduction Act, which is the largest investment in clean energy and climate action ever. But first, I want to acknowledge that today's event is coming during a time of heartbreak as the toll of extreme weather fueled by climate change is being felt across the country. And
you heard what he just did. They just blamed those fires, which many suspect are arson. They just blamed those fires on climate change and used it to celebrate the Inflation Reduction Act. I only played this for you as a reminder to what you already know, and hopefully as a wake-up call to all the norms who are listening. You are not dealing with liberals, leftists, progressives, Democrats. You are dealing with evil, demonic communists. They are anti-humans. You want to know why they're called anti-humans? Solzhenitsyn, after spending enough time in the gulag, called them the enemies of humanity. I call them anti-humans. It doesn't matter what you call. You want to know why that's what they are? Because they hate humanity.
They don't treasure it at all. There's nothing sacred about you. Nothing God breathed about you. You're just a god. You're just a cog in the wheel in their eyes. Therefore, in the face of human tragedy, they will almost always say things like this. Why? Because there is no human tragedy to somebody who doesn't care about humanity. You care about humanity. Therefore, there are tragedies to you. This is sad, and that is sad, and this guy died, and this thing burned, and it breaks your heart because you are pro-human. You must understand and accept they are anti-human. So John Podesta looks at burnt down homes and charred bodies, and it doesn't stir anything in him at all, because him and Biden and all of them, they're anti-humans. There is no tragedy. That's why, without hesitation, they will run down to a school shooting while the kids are still dying and start campaigning. Why? Because it's not a tragedy to them. There is no such thing as a human tragedy to a communist. There is only opportunity. Only opportunity. Imagine sitting out in front of the charred shell that used to be your home in Hawaii. Keep in mind, most of those people are not wealthy. This didn't happen in wealthy neighborhoods. You're sitting outside the charred remains of your home. Grandpa's old picture's gone. All your stuff gone. Maybe, God forbid, but maybe you lost a relative in the fire. And then you turn on the television set and you see the anti-humans speaking like this.
As Kareen noted, we're marking the one-year anniversary of a truly transformative piece of legislation, the Inflation Reduction Act, which is the largest investment in clean energy and climate action ever. But first, I want to acknowledge that today's event is coming during a time of heartbreak as the toll of extreme weather fueled by climate change.
Imagine what would go through your mind. And look, it's not just Podesta. I'm singling him out because he's a piece of trash and he said it today. It's all of them. They can't even really pretend to care. They can't. That's what the Biden administration has struggled with, and all Democrats will struggle with from this point forward, because, well, they're all communists now. They're all anti-humans. And they don't care, so they can't really pretend. You hear the FEMA administrator?
We keep interviewing survivor after survivor who says that either they didn't see any government personnel or assistance for days, or that they still haven't. How do you explain the disconnect between what they're saying and what you're saying about all the resources that are there right now?
I think you need to understand that this community is going through an amazingly traumatic event. I can tell you that we have personnel that are on the ground year round.
Did you hear what she did? You told us that you were mobilizing and you had a bunch of people there and you were helping, but the people who've lost everything, they said they haven't seen you, that they've never heard from you. And you hear what she said? Well, hey, they've gone through a traumatic event. All right. They're obviously too sad to remember that they ran into us, guys. Anti-humans. Sick anti-humans. All right. Before I get to the open anti-white racism in New York, I actually want to address an email here. Something that I have thought about a lot. Shogun, do you think it's time we stop using the term conservative? By my definition, a conservative is focused on conserving what's already been established. If we now need to be on the attack instead of the defense, it seems we're no longer conservative at all. We're no longer culture, but counterculture. Does that make sense? Well, I that's why I don't call myself a conservative anymore. I call myself an anti-communist. That's why I rarely use the word conservative. And you probably still do consider yourself that. That's more traditionally what we call ourselves, but just allow me to explain my thinking in it. He's right. Conservative was supposed to conserve what we had, to conserve our freedoms, to conserve this great nation. Now, let me ask you a very hard question I've asked myself. I don't know that there's a nice answer, and there are probably several answers that are correct, but what has conservatism conserved? Anyone? Does someone have an answer for me? What has conservatism conserved? I would love to know. It didn't keep spending down. It didn't keep our border closed. It didn't protect the unborn. It didn't protect our freedoms during COVID. It didn't stop the FBI turning into the Cheka. It has done nothing about the DOJ indicting Donald Trump four times. In fact, at this point, unless something has changed in the last 5 minutes since I got on the air, I don't think they're even pretending that they're going to do something about that, are they? They're not even, it's not just that they're not doing anything. They're not even acting like they're going to do something. The national debt's what? I don't even track it anymore because it's too disheartening. Last time I looked, it was like $33 trillion. Chris, you can look it up, but it doesn't matter. What has conservatism conserved? When I turned on Nickelodeon Jr. when I was a child, when mom let me watch TV, I would watch things like The Andy Griffith Show and The Rifleman. If my sons were to turn on Nickelodeon Jr. today, and they won't, there will be a drag queen shaking his penis in their face. What has conservatism conserved? It's very clear we were too soft and too defensive for far too long. We must become anti-communist. We must. Would you like an example of what I'm talking about? Oh, I've got one for you. I've got a great one for you in just a moment. Before I get to that, maybe we can conserve our dogs. I mean, for longer than we have. Eventually, they're going to go. They're living things just like you and I. They're going to die one day. But what if we could prolong that life? And instead of their last 2 or 3 years, them hobbling around, half blind, coat, doll, bad breath as their teeth rot out of their skull, what if there were healthier years at the end? That's what Rough Greens can give you. Created by naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, it's an all-natural nutritional supplement you pour on your dog's food. Let Rough Greens prolong your dog's life and make them healthier now, no matter their age. Pour it on your dog's food. 833-33-MY-DOG or go to roughgreens.com/Jesse.
He doesn't care if you believe him, but he's right. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Wednesday, not a Thursday, like I falsely said, giving you false hope. That was obfuscation, Chris. That what? I think I nailed it that time. I was obfuscating. I kind of did. Remember, you can email the show. Love, hate, death threats, ask Dr. Jesse questions. You can email those into jesse@jessekellyshow.com. But talking about that mentality of them versus us, conservatives, or why do we call ourselves conservatives? What is conservatism conserved? That leads me to this, because I also got this email, because people were mad, understandably so. Look, we're all mad about these indictments and stuff. The subject of this one was feckless, cowardly red DAs. Oracle of oracles. I cannot fathom that there is not one Republican DA that has the spine to indict any of these communists. It blows my mind how feckless and cowardly they are. Thank God we didn't have to rely on people like them in 1941. My disdain for them is rivaling that of the communists. Actually, I might even have more respect for the commies than them. If I hear the turn the cheek one more time, I'm going to vomit. I'm praying for someone to grow a spine and punch back. Am I wrong? No. You're right. There's a clip going around. My buddy Tom Elliott at Gravy and does these great mashups. And there's this long one. I'm not going to let it play for too long. I'll let it go for a few. That's making the rounds today. And the response to this video making the rounds is so incredibly telling. Anyway, here's a bit of it. What it is, it's just a big cut from 2019-2020 of Democrats accusing Trump of weaponizing the DOJ.
Now that he's got the right attorney general in position to do it, we now know they really have been trying to gin up criminal prosecutions and criminal investigations into the president's perceived enemies, politically motivated persecution, right? Courtesy of Bill Barr. I'll roll in the FBI on you. That's how banana republics work, right?
The home of the 45th president of the United States has been raided by the FBI.
Mr. Trump is using the Justice Department to go after his perceived enemies. I feel worried about the prospect of the...
Okay. It goes on for 2 minutes. And you've probably, maybe you've even heard that clip today. Or maybe you've seen it floating around. And the responses from the right are so incredibly telling. because the right will play a clip like that. And you know what they'll all say? Look at how hypocritical they are. Oh, these hypocrites. They accused Trump of doing something he didn't do. And then they turned around and did it. What hypocrites, guys. Except that's not the lesson I took from it at all. Not at all. I took it as, it sounds to me like one side means business and the other side does not. It sounds to me like one side loves to talk, the other side loves to do. It sounds like one side thinks this is kind of a game. I mean, it's serious, but in the end, look, we're all come together, right? It's no big deal. And the other side, they don't intend to come together at all. Look, let's just talk about it. Trump ran on Drain the Swamp. Lock her up. I was at one of those rallies chanting it myself. After all, Hillary Clinton is a criminal. A criminal. Several times over. Crimes committed. Walked into the Oval Office and immediately said, we're going to kind of let this go. Not interested in this anymore. The communists, they didn't walk into the Oval Office and let it go, did they? They walked into the office and they meant business. Again, one side naively thinking that in the end, this is all just kind of a robust game of politics, but it's not that serious, guys. And you know what the worst part about this indictment, about these Trump indictments, you know the absolute worst part about them? And there's a bunch bad about them. I was thinking about it this morning, just kind of sitting there sad as I was eating breakfast for what it means for the country and everything else and the election. And we'll talk about that here in a few. But you know the saddest part is there's actually a good part to them. And here's the good part, the part that's beneficial. I think America, I think much of the right, I think they need to see Donald Trump in leg irons and handcuffs before they will really, truly get how serious the other side is. These people are dead serious. And because it's so outside of the realm of anything we would want to do to our political opponents, we somehow think that there's a shared humanity here and we're all kind of in the political game. But in the end, guys, we'll all just kind of let it go and it's not that serious. But that's not true. Do I need to remind you that these people campaigned for office on locking up and suing Donald Trump? That was New York AG Letitia James. She sees the law as what? What was it? What'd she say? I'll play it again because the sound's kind of bad. What'd she view it as?
As the next attorney general, I see the law as a sword and as a shield.
For one, it's sword, Letitia. It's not sword. But two, she sees it as a sword and a shield. Who's been telling you these people view themselves as soldiers, the vanguard? We pretend still that we're just kind of in a game. They're not playing a game at all. And I am worried that it will take Trump's imprisonment to finally wake up conservatives to where we are. All right. We have to talk a little bit about some anti-white racism and Russian spies. But first, we need to talk about saving some people, something good, saving people. Human trafficking, honestly, if you dwell too long on it, it can make you sick. To know that there are kids all across America, as we speak, around you, being trafficked is awful when you consider what that means. Everything that means, it's just awful. The average age is 14. But what do we do, right? What do we do? You're going to bank on the FBI? We'd help a servo project. That's what we do. You want to be the hands and feet? You want to be the sword and shield? Going after these people, getting them thrown in prison, and saving the kids? That's what the Acervo Project does. Go to theacervoproject.org. They ask $14 a month. A-S-S-E-R-V-O. Theacervoproject.org. Let's save the kids. Let's throw the scum in prison. We have to, all right? We'll be back.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. Both Nate and I are journalists who moonlight as poker players. We've both won, and I have to say lost, hundreds of thousands of dollars playing poker. And poker is a lens that we're going to use to approach this entire show, because poker isn't just about playing cards. It's actually about how to make good decisions. It's an entire framework for thinking about the world.
In addition to poker, we'll be talking about the wide world of gambling, so sports betting, for example, plus the news, politics, it is an election year, and personal decisions, too.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
Tune into Risky Business every Thursday.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Wednesday. If you miss any part of the show, you can download the whole thing on iHeart, Google, Spotify, iTunes.
Look, we talk about doing these things. Lock her up! And then we get in there and, oh, haha, I was just kind of kidding. Let's make a deal. They mean business. We have treated this like a game for way too long. They're not playing games. And we do this same stuff, too, when it comes to how they speak in horrible ways about race these days, about white people, the kulaks, the current kulaks in this country. If you need to know more about kulaks, go look up Stalin and the kulaks. That's what you are now. If you are an anti-communist, no matter your color, they consider you to be a kulak. You go to church, you raise a family, you a decent human being, any of these things? You have a job, hold down a steady job? Do you think the government should stay out of your life? You're a kulak. You're the enemy. Well, I want you to listen to how comfortable these people are speaking publicly. The person I'm about to play for you is not some child on TikTok. This is a state representative in New York. Charles Barron is his name. Charles Barron feels complete comfort publicly saying things like this.
I have the distinct honor to be able to come before you and say I actually lost white population in my community. I lost them. They left. I didn't ask them why. They left. So if you see one or two or three or four or five whites in my neighborhood, they're passing through.
Ginning up more and more racism. More and more hatred between people. These people mean business, man. And remember, they act on these things. These people act on these things. Keep safe out there. By the way, do you have your hero gun yet? You have a hero arrow yet? Speaking of New York, you see that latest video? Freaking awful, man. I'm not even going to describe it for you. Carry something on you that will allow you to stop a bad man from hurting you, because bad men are all around you now and they're being encouraged to hurt you. They'll hurt a million people, go right to Rikers Island, and they're out in a week to hurt some more if they even get to Rikers Island. Carry something on you, please. A hero arrow is even smaller than a hero gun, shaped like a TV remote. Goes right in your pocket, ladies, right in your purse, even those little hot chick purses you carry. Come on. Get one for your loved one. Hero2020.com. You don't need a carry permit or anything. Hero2020.com. Code Jesse gets you a special discount. All right. All right. Now back to what we were talking about here. The seriousness of how they take things, the seriousness of how they intend to destroy is something that we have such a difficult time understanding, because it's not who we are. It's not how we are. It's not how we operate. But they're not only serious. They're in major positions of power now. That has been the difference. That has been the difference in how much destruction there is and how fast the destruction happened. We talked about this a while ago on the show, but it's useful. It's useful to think about again. Remember, we've had communists in America since the early 1900s, when they were trying to get a foothold. I write about all this in the Anti-Communist Manifesto, by the way. We've had them here. And you notice, as I lay out the history of it, they were always trying to get a foothold. Always trying to get a foothold. All the way up to the 60s, they were still trying to get a foothold, and they could never really catch on. And then they just kept adjusting their language, adjusting their methods, until they really came across cultural Marxism. They finally realized, okay, we got to ditch this working man crap. We got to focus on race, feminist, gay, and all this other crap. And that's where we can find the malcontent foot soldiers we need. And they dug into that, right? About 60s and 70s. Because back then, sure, there were commies, but they're on the friggin' street corner. They've got signs up. They're doing stupid things. They're not in any positions of power. Once they figured out how to recruit better here in America, what happened was, if you think of it as a level, think of it as a, you know, a battery. Look at it as a battery. And let's say they had nothing, maybe the very, very bottom. The battery was on red. They began to fill up that battery with their people as they did, well, as the old saying goes, the long march through the institutions. Now, oh, we have communists just like they had communists here in the 1960s, except our communists are in positions of extreme power. Our communists are district attorneys. Our communists are senators, congressmen, presidents, CEOs. Our communists are chief medical officers. The chief psychologist at a California Children's Hospital, her name is Diane Ehrensaft, chief psychologist. She claims that children should be able to identify as minotaurs. Remember, a minotaur is that thing from the Greek ideology. It's actually a really cool story about one of them in a maze. I'm not going to go into it right now, but where you have the body of a man, but the head of a bull. That's a minotaur. This isn't some turbo freak on the corner saying, hey, your kids can be minotaurs. This is a doctor, the big cheese at a children's hospital. That's why we are where we are. Because they moved from the street corners into the institutions. And remember, a nation's institutions will determine the direction of the nation. There, it's everything. We've talked before about how they take control of the factories. They take control of what makes everything. Like we were, I've been lamenting lately. It's going to sound like I'm changing subject, and I guess I kind of am, but I'm not at the same time. I've been lamenting the COVID lockdown stuff because that has led to all this insane indictment stuff. How? Well, here's how. We have all these tyrants here, all these tyrants here. And they did horrific, tyrannical things during COVID. Locking down your school, taking away your livelihood. Here, inject this in your body. No, you have to wear this. We have all these tyrants here. And they committed all these acts of tyranny. But the people did not reject these tyrants. They all got reelected. Republican and Democrat, by the way. Maybe you're sitting there screaming, yeah, Kathy Hochul sucks. Yep, she does. So does Greg Abbott. Reelected overwhelmingly by Republicans in the primary. He had a real primary. I think he got like 70% of the vote. Greg Abbott was a tyrant during COVID. Mike DeWine, Ohio, Republican, horrible tyrant during COVID. Reelected easily. Gavin Newsom, like I said, Kathy Hochul. All the worst tyrants either got promoted or reelected. Now, what's that mean for indictments and things like that now? What it means is the tyrants in this country know that there will be no significant pushback or blowback from the populace when they do tyrannical things because we don't have a country full of people who crave freedom the way you do. And that sucks for you. That's grossly, it's wrong. It's wrong that you would crave it and your fellow countrymen will not. Do not. But they do not. They don't. They proved it over and over and over again. Republican and Democrat, they don't care about tyrants. In fact, they prefer them. And frankly, it's what we deserve. And so now, if you're some DA, Alvin Bragg to Fannie Willis, and you feel like just bringing up insane charges and just bottling up Trump in some totally corrupt communist system that he cannot possibly escape. In the past, you would fear some sort of blowback from that. Oh my gosh, what if the people rise up? They say it's too much. What if I lose my next election? What? Today, they know there will be no blowback at all. Alvin Bragg, Alvin Bragg brings this ridiculous indictment that's even past the statute of limitations. It's ridiculous. Alvin Bragg didn't lose, won't lose his political career. Alvin Bragg just made his political career. That's what people of New York City want. It is. Fannie Willis, Fulton County, Georgia. She just got a promotion to senator. Maybe governor. Something. She got a promotion. Jack Smith in D.C., that special process, special counsel. Jack Smith and his family just wrote his own ticket to whatever private club, private college, private jet, whatever he wants. Jack Smith is going to be the belle of the ball in high society because the American people had an opportunity to reject tyranny, and instead the American people loved it and asked for more. What happened during COVID has led directly to what's happening right now. We got a lot of work to do. That's what there is to. All right, quit. Let's talk about spying and emails. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly returns next.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Wednesday. Now, let's step away from politics for a minute. That was a lot of heavy to start the show. Let's step away from politics for a minute and let's deal with something I'm really an expert in. Spying and covert operations. What, Chris? I could have been a great spy. I could have been. I'm telling you. Yeah, everyone, you guys are with me in Israel. Could you believe how well I blended in out there? It was amazing. Yeah, I did. Anyway, I blended in. No one even knew I was there. They're like, wow, where's Jesse? He just kind of becomes part of the environment. It's being a chameleon is not everyone can pull it off, but I just, you have to know how to work your way through certain situations and cultures. And so as a spy expert, I have to tell you, I feel like some mistakes were made with these Russian spies they just caught in the UK. You see, the spies, they ended up getting caught because they got in a fight with their neighbors. They got in a fight with their neighbors because they already had a satellite dish on their roof, right? You know how satellite dish has to be pointed a certain direction to catch the satellite signal to watch TV. Well, then they decided that they needed to communicate some of their spy stuff. So they put another satellite dish on the roof that faced in the opposite direction. And that ended up having the neighbors ask some serious questions. But wait, there's more. I feel like the guy violated one of the things you should never probably violate as a spy, and as a covert operative who's 6'8", you're going to have to take my word on this. One of his email addresses had 007 in it. So, look, not everybody in my profession is an expert at being covert. I just feel like that I should put on some spy training for these people to help them out, just to try to blend a little bit more. All right, let's get to some emails. Jesse, I just had to tell you this story about my anti-communist grandsons. I always take them to the bookstore when they come visit me in communist Colorado. They pick out what books they want. I usually don't buy myself books, but I wanted another copy of your book to share with others, so I picked one up and handed it to my 13-year-old grandson, Logan, to hold. We checked out, and after paying, I asked Logan where my anti-communist book was, and he tells me he put it on the shelf in front of all the climate change nutters' books. I was bummed that I didn't have my second copy of your book, but I was very excited that he knew right where to put it. If you read this on air, please tell them hi. Logan, Caleb, and Grant, they listen every day with their mom, Lisa, who's busy raising anti-communist boys. Love the podcast and the show. Those boys sound like they're going to turn out just all right. Good job, fellas. Keep going. I'm telling you, there is something that gives me so much hope. And at first, when I first started noticing this, it was with my own sons. I started noticing this serious, serious anti-communist strain in them. They're not being bent by the culture around them. They're disgusted by the culture around them. And I didn't dismiss it. That's not true. I liked it, but I didn't think it was a growing trend. I honestly thought, to be totally honest, I just thought it was just showing off for me because of what I believe and how I talk, and they listen to the show and what I do. You know, boys love to impress their dad, right? Whatever your dad's into or whatnot, even if you're not into it, you'll pretend. You'll pretend like you're into it. My dad was a great basketball player. I actually played college scholarship and all that. And I didn't really like basketball that much. It was okay. I played it for years and years and years and years. But when I was a small child, 6, 7 years old, I'd wait till I thought he was about to get home from work, and I'd go outside and act like I'd been practicing all day. Just so, hey, look at me shooting hoops, Dad. You and me, just a couple hoop stars. Boys love to impress their dad, and that's what I thought my sons were doing. But then they start talking about their friends. Then I start getting these emails from you, young men and young women who are flatly rejecting the filth out there. And I'm telling you, especially with young men, there is a hardened anti-communist strain that comes. And here's a huge leg up we are going to have in the future that we've never had before. We are the rebels. And young men love to be rebels. They do. Young men love to do the forbidden. That's why they love bad words. Young boys love bad words. Honestly, when a young boy discovers a bad word from one of his friends, or maybe mom or dad if they get in an argument, or something, if he discovers a bad word, he will play with it like it's a new toy. Why? It's forbidden. It's wrong. Well, these young people today, they're being raised in an environment where anything is acceptable except for being on the right. Oh my gosh, you believe the border should be secure? Ugh. What, you're pro-life? What? What? You're not a Democrat? What? We have become the counterculture. And they love that. And it is fun. And I'll be honest with you. I think if we embrace it, we can have a lot of fun with it. It can be fun being the counterculture. It can be fun if you have the stomach for it, or if you develop the stomach for it. It takes time. It can be fun to be the only voice in the classroom. Nope, that's stupid. Nope, I'm going to do my project on the Anti-Communist Manifesto. No, I'm not telling you to do that. Don't get yourself in trouble. Or do it. I don't care. But it can be fun to be the one voice that stands out. And then watching as others hear your voice and they come behind you and they say, yeah, what he said, I'm tired of being told what to do. Because people instinctively know, even if they can't quantify it, people young and old, they instinctively know there's something wrong with what's going on here in this country. There's something sick. There's something deeply wrong about it. Even if everyone can't quantify it, and most people cannot, you can obviously, but you're the hyper informed. Most people who don't consume this kind of stuff, they can't really quantify it. They can't really explain it, but they still know something's wrong. They know that things shouldn't be this way. And so it's going to create a generation of rebels. And I think that's exciting. I think it's really freaking cool. All right. You know what else is really freaking cool? We were talking about clearing houses and urban warfare. And we were talking about that FBI SWAT thing about a half hour from now. Steve Friend from the FBI, formerly of the FBI, I should say. He was the brave whistleblower, friend of the show, who came forward and talked about all the malfeasance there. Is he going to come join us? And we're going to chit-chat about that. You think he might know a little something about it? I bet he will. It's friggin' awesome. And then we have anti-Catholicism. No, not from me. Biden's in Hawaii and all kinds of stuff still to come on the Jesse Kelly Show. Let's also do this. Let's make sure we are practicing with our weapons. So maybe you're saying, Jesse, I can't. Didn't you see about inflation? I can't afford it. I can't afford the ammo. I can't afford the range. I sympathize. I went and bought just a couple boxes of ammo the other night just so I could plink through something with something at the range, that gun I was going to buy, and I did buy. And it was, I was 20 minutes on the range. Just put myself through a couple drills. $99. $99. Why don't you get a Mantis X and practice in your home without firing a shot? Dry fire practicing in your home. You will get feedback. They will put you through drills. You will become a good shooter, a very good shooter, without firing a shot. The Green Berets use it for a reason. Go to MantisX.com and get one. It's how we all get good, and we all need to get good, especially in this environment. MantisX.com. Do not hope you're ready for that horrible moment. Make sure. All right? All right? 2 more hours left. Hang on.
I'm Maria Konnikova.
And I'm Nate Silver.
And our new podcast, Risky Business, is a show about making better decisions. We're both journalists who moonlight as poker players, and that's the lens we're going to use to approach this entire show.
We're going to be discussing everything from high-stakes poker to personal questions.
Like whether I should call a plumber or fix my shower myself.
And of course, we'll be talking about the election, too.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.